I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. These are the weekly meetings of the Proceedings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to make things make sense for all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hello.
As you just said.
Hello. How are you? It's good. You were gone last week and I missed
you.
Yeah,
and
you're back.
I apologize to people. I am the problem. I was gone last week and I'm going to be gone next week for Dragon Con.
Yeah.
So we probably won't have a Current Geek next week either. But I promise to settle down one of these days and make an honest podcast of Current Geek.
Well, next weekend is also my anniversary, so it actually probably is.
Yeah,
it worked out okay.
I mean, it's totally Scott's fault next week.
Yeah, it's not Tom, it's me.
No, but I'm really psyched that we're back and we've got a great guest.
We have a fantastic guest, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show, Manu Saida. If I'm saying that right, I hope I am. He is the author of a fantastic book called Trekonomics. That sounds just like what you think it sounds like, which is available over at inkshares.com. You can go search for it. Manu, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Good to have you here, sir.
Very happy to be on.
Well, we're stoked to have you. I feel like you're going to be the perfect kind of guy for this. We had a little some issues with Skype earlier, but we got you on a phone in 2015. We made it work. So I think we're okay. We'll launch right into the headlines then and get going.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened this week?
Well, you might be sad, no. Scott Johnson.
Oh, no.
Because you're thinking, man, there are no Peter Jackson Middle Earth sagas in the theater this winter.
Yeah.
But good news, everyone, there will be three The Hobbit Trilogy Extended Editions. They can get even longer. Are coming to theaters this October. The three-night event will be screened in 500 venues October 5th, 7th, and 13th. It'll be the first time the extended versions have been shown in cinemas, and it'll be the first time that the longer version of the Battle of the Five Armies will have been seen anywhere. Screenings include a recorded introduction for Peter Jackson, and each film starts at 7:30 p.m. local time.
Wait, and do they just run straight through all three starting at 7:30? That seems...
In different nights.
Oh, so got it. Okay.
One at 7:30 p.m. one night, then another one at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, that sounded scary. So Manu, I already felt like those movies were kind of too long as they stood. How do you feel about seeing more of that, I suppose?
Well, I'm a sucker. I mean, my understanding is the same guys who are, you know, streaming operas and movie theaters who are organizing this. Mm. So I don't know. It's going to be high definition copies and all that. I don't know if the quality will probably be great and the sound will be awesome. And
Who knows?
I mean, you can't get that experience on your home video, you know, setup.
Sure.
So I might actually go at least for one. I'll try to scoot out and leave my wife with the kid.
The real question for me is whether or not Five Armies improves with more length, because I really didn't like that last one. I was really sleepy and bored in it, and I don't know why. I go into each one of those movies excited. I want my Lord of the Rings experience, but I came out of there going, ugh, and maybe these extended versions will, improve on that. They certainly added to some of what we had in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
But it rarely adds. That is true. I mean, originally they were going to make two movies.
Yeah.
And they decided, you know, what the hell, let's do three.
Yeah.
So
it's not unheard of for a longer cut to be better. Star Trek, the motion picture. Is generally thought to be better with the director's cut, mm-hmm. which is longer,
yeah.
which you wouldn't think because that movie felt very long.
Don't
Yeah. I am skeptical that more Hobbit is a solution to my own issues, which I liked it a lot more than most people, I think. I did not hate mm-hmm. them at all, but I did feel like there was just too much crammed in there.
Yeah. And that, I'm just saying, by the third movie, I was just tired, and I don't know why. Like the Return of the King was amazing. I mean, admittedly, I got a little sleepy during Two Towers in the original trilogy. Slow part.
To your point, though, I mean, Return of the King, I'm not sure that the extended versions added a lot mm-hmm. to the pacing and to the drama of the original three movies. Mm-hmm. I thought actually the longer versions were less. I mean, I personally didn't think that it added a lot.
I liked them because they showed me things from the book that I'm like, ooh, I wondered what that would look like. But you're right. It didn't they didn't need to be there. I agree.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because here's the deal. Peter Jackson can't make a movie without making it 5 hours long. So we just have to accept that fact. We have to move on with our lives and watch whatever he does
King
next.
King Kong was like unwatchable.
Yeah, that thing was huge.
Great movie, but...
There were two movies in that movie. The first half, you didn't get to see the monkey. And then when you finally did, you got a whole other movie. Really weird.
Yeah. Anyway. I've got it on HD DVD.
Oh, that's right.
I really wonder what he's going to do next.
Yeah, I have no idea what his next project is, but one would hope it's less Hobbits and less long. We'll see.
All right, EFC88 wanted us to know that yesterday Instagram started supporting images and video in full portrait as well as landscape mode. And to celebrate that long-awaited, much-anticipated update, the folks over at Lucasfilm gave us a tiny glimpse of the other long-awaited, much-anticipated update they're working on. A 15-second teaser, full widescreen, showing John Boyega's Finn holding a blue lightsaber in that same snowy forest where Adam Driver's Kylo Ren had been shown flashing his Red Cross lightsaber. 3, 2, 1, speculate.
All right. So I saw that thing, that video. And while I got pretty excited, one thing that frustrated me is a lot of the websites that ran it outside of Instagram looped it the way Instagram would. So I thought there was more. So I got like 8 seconds of this thing in the forest and then it would start again. I'm like, oh, there's more. And then I'd realize, no, I'm just seeing the same thing over and over again. But I'm more blown away by why. I mean, we can speculate like crazy on the Star Wars thing, but I'm a little bit weirded out as to why Instagram made this decision. I thought their whole thing, Tom, was like, we do square videos and they're super cool because you can add weird filters to them and they're kind of artistic and we're never going to change. I thought that was kind of their thing.
All right. So just to be clear, Scott, we could choose to speculate on whether John Boyega is holding Luke Skywalker's original lightsaber that was passed along to him by Obi-Wan Kenobi and had been Anakin Skywalker's actual lightsaber. We could do that, but you want to talk about the fact that Instagram designed its software for small iPhones back in the iPhone 3GS days, and why are they finally getting around to changing that?
All right, now that you've put it that way, I agree. Manu, weigh in on this. Which direction do we go?
I'm still wondering what Kim Kardashian is going to do now. Because suddenly it opens up like a whole new world for her.
She's got a lot more room to move in.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, that all stuff is fine. Let's talk about that lightsaber. We've only ever seen a blue one in Star Wars in the hands of Luke Skywalker, passed down from his father. One would perhaps assume that that's the same. So here, I'm going to go a little deeper here. In the trailer, there is a scene of, we think, somebody handing that self-same lightsaber to Princess Leia, and we don't see much more of that hilt, but we see it being passed. Is it possible that she gets it from Luke, gives it to the Boyega's character, and now he's got to go in the forest and do a little blue versus red?
And what about Kylo Ren? I don't understand what's going on here. Wasn't the Sith Lords, weren't they supposed to have been eradicated?
Well, there's also aren't there stories floating around that he's not, that J.J. Abrams says he is not a Sith?
He's a wannabe.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, hey, I think I could be a Sith. I'm going to be a self-taught Sith. Guess what? You're not really a Sith.
Yeah.
But then the stakes are not as high as in the, you know, original trilogies. I mean,
well, maybe
I'm trying to wrap my head around what's going to happen. You know, I'm like everybody else.
Well, maybe here's what they're going to do. This is total speculation, but maybe, I don't know why I had to preface it with that. Of course it is. Nobody's seen the movie, but yes, it's speculation at this point that maybe he's trying to be a Sith Lord, circumvent the rules that govern who can be Sith and who can't, and this entire thing ends up with him doing just that, and JJ is just being a little sneaky by saying, he did this too with one of the Star Trek movies, by the way, lots of misdirection, so I wouldn't put it past him to say,
Khan
isn't
in the movie, it's John's whatever.
Right. Or saying, you know, hey, Kylo Ren's not a Sith in the footage you've seen so far, But yeah. by the end of this thing, he's, you know.
Well, maybe he's messing around with Sith powers, but he doesn't have a Sith Lord to train him. So he's.
But then he's that's an amateur.
Yeah. That's even more dangerous, though. So the stakes are even higher because here's somebody who could do a lot of damage that a Sith Lord wouldn't. Like, the Sith Lords can direct their damage, whereas this yeah. person could do unintentional damage.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
So, but like, what's the political dimension of all this? Like, is Kylo Ren about to take over whatever political entity came after the Empire? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's the big picture of this.
Oh, that's yeah. easier for me to wrap my head around. It's a rump parliament, right? It's the Eastern Empire of the Roman Empire, like trying to consolidate and preserve itself in the face of the fall of its big. I feel like that's easier for them to deal with.
Somehow. Sure. J.J. Abrams says this. So here's an actual quote. He said, Kylo Ren is not a Sith. He works under Supreme Leader Snoke, who is played by Andy Serkis. He's the voice you always hear asking if you can feel it or whatever, who is a powerful figure on the dark side of the Force. He is a character who came to the name Kylo Ren when he joined a group called the Knights of Ren. Let's see. The movie explains the origins of the mask and where it's from, but the design was meant to be a nod to the Vader mask, as well as what's come before. And then they goes on to say later he was part of a group called the First Order. I don't know enough about my Star Wars history slash.
Well, the First Order is the remains of the Empire, as far as we understand.
Is it okay? Yeah. All right.
So they gave out a lot of backstory of what is going on.
Yeah.
I had not followed that because I've been working on Star Trek lately, but yeah, okay.
In the end,
we're in the other Star Universe.
Right. He'll pull off his helmet in the last 5 minutes and it'll be Benedict Cumberbatch in there saying he'll get Kirk no matter what it takes. That's what's going
to
happen.
Hey, real quickly before we move along to the next story, I know the Manu, you're toying around with an idea involving Star Wars that you wanted to see if you could get some feedback from people.
Yeah, I was very curious to see if the geeks out there would be interested. I mean, for my next book, I'm considering doing something on the economics of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I even have a title. It would be called Wookieonomics.
The in-universe economy, right?
I mean, like the economics, real-world franchise. Like,
I think Wookieonomics is an incredible name. You have to call it that.
Yeah, I guess, and I have to do it, I guess, but I'm very curious to get feedback and gauge the interest out there, because I think there's a lot to say about it. Like, is the Force the invisible hand of the market?
Interesting.
That's a question.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
Even more than Star Trek, and I haven't read your book, but I want to, because I've been reading about your book, and it sounds like something I'd really like, so I plan to, but it seems like it's an easier universe to wrap your head around the economy of, because in Star Trek, there's a lot of, we have replicators now, and we've moved beyond this. We're an enlightened race. We don't need money. But then again, you know, there's Gold Press Latinum happening in Deep Space Nine, and there's obviously trade happening in that universe. But it seems like it's a little harder to pinpoint, which is probably a big part of your book. But in the case of Star Wars, there's money everywhere. Yeah, credits and, you know, all this stuff's happening all the time. Bounty hunters are a thing, of real import in that world. So, yeah, I'm guessing that would be fascinating.
And you do have robots, and at the same time, you have slaves. So how does that work?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I find this very curious. I'm very curious about it. So I'm curious to see what the audience will say. I'm really toying with the idea. I'm not toying it, actually. Probably will do it after I'm done with Trekonomics. Sorry for the plug.
Oh, right.
So, yeah.
No, that's okay. So the chat room seems to love the idea of Wookieonomics. If people want to tell you their thoughts, should they just do it on Twitter?
Yes. And my handle is at Trekonomics. So, they can,
oh, yes,
please do it.
Yeah. Trekonomics is Onomics, just like it sounds. Trekonomics, everybody.
Trekonomics.
There's no C,
Yeah. So, there you go. Did I say TRCK? Did I?
Maybe you did.
I might have. Yeah, that's bad. All right.
You're wild like that.
What's that?
Ninja Steve wanted us to examine the two fast food chains' approach to appropriating International Peace Day, September 21st, for their own marketing purposes. Burger King started it. They put a full-page ad in newspapers on Wednesday calling on McDonald's to join it in serving a McWhopper at a pop-up restaurant located in Atlanta, halfway between the two respective corporate headquarters. McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook responded on Facebook saying, the two companies could do something bigger to make a difference, and noted that their business competition did not compare to, quote, the unequaled circumstances of the real pain and suffering of war. So Burger King takes out newspaper ads and comes up with a marketing stunt to celebrate peace. McDonald's gets all self-righteous but goes Facebook with the response. What do you guys make of this?
All right, here's what I say. I say that McDonald's McDonald's reply, I didn't mean anything by that, everybody, but McDonald's reply seems to be like a little smug. I mean, to say something bigger to make a difference, this other cause is pretty good. You know, it's not like it's not just a markety thing. There's a real chance for them to do stuff together. I feel like this will probably happen. Something will come together. And then someone reminded me today, a friend of mine texted me and said, I can go to McDonald's or Burger King right now and buy a Whopper and buy a Big Mac. And then in my car, I can assemble a combination McWhopper.
Well, sure, you could also go buy ground beef and lettuce and a bun and make it at home. Like, the point isn't that you could do it already. The point is the symbolism of it. But I kind of agree with the McDonald's side of, like, that really doesn't help anything, and it kind of belittles the problem of war when you make it into it.
I tend to agree with the McDonald's CEO. He's a new CEO, by the way, and he's from England. So he probably comes from a different place. Probably. Obviously, you know, literally, but also, I guess, maybe he's not too inclined to these kind of marketing stunts. I mean, this is basically a burn, right? It's like, oh, buzz off.
I'll tell you where this stops being self-righteous palaver, as Scott sort of was saying it is if McDonald's comes back with an actual, like, hey, you know what we should do is donate this money or provide food to a camp in Europe for refugees, or, you know, like some kind of actual thing.
Yeah. If he came back with that, or still does.
Yeah.
They somewhere in the letter or somewhere in the response, it said next time a phone call would be sufficient or something. That also smacked of a little snark to me.
Yes.
But what did we expect? These are the two biggest fast food chains in the country, in the world. Of course, they're going to be a little bit cautious and trepidatious. And, you know, one side's going to think they're being all cool for offering the idea. And the other side's like, well, hold on now. If we're doing this, then we need to be in charge.
And you know what? I don't know if you saw the visuals as well of the Mac Whopper.
Yeah.
And this mask of, like, you know, some dude at the social media ad agency, you know, thinking something, you know. I mean, it's not very well thought out.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I kind of want to try it.
Though. I would, too. I would totally go buy one and eat it. I would not pause. And if you told me that a couple of bucks of it would go to a good cause, I'd do it even more. So, yeah, let's hope they
get that. Yeah, but they didn't talk about this. They didn't talk about, you know, giving the proceeds on that day to, you know, any kind of cause that would help people. They're not talking about this.
Yeah. Still time.
There's still time. And what if the cause was they get the king and they get Ronald McDonald in a wrestling ring and then they fight it out like men? How about that?
Dude,
that weird that king be, with that
that
mask.
Is both worse and better than their original idea for Burger King.
Or even, like, you know, wrestling in Thousand Island Song.
I'm ready.
Proceeds go to the Syrian Relief Fund. Maybe it all works out.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Starfury Zeta sent us the awesome news about Chat Roulette users who found a live streaming first-person shooter-style game created by UK production team Realm Pictures while tooling around on Chat Roulette. First of all, big news, folks. Folks are still using Chat Roulette.
Yeah.
To play, users talked to the hero character through his scenes, giving him commands like, oh, you should run now, or go for the headshot, or check what's in that pot over there. It was like a text-based adventure game, but you were telling an actual person on Chat Roulette. The game had sound effects, blood, guns, rhino turrets, rocket launchers. The team released a making-of video and said they spent about $1,450 making the game. The main actor wore a motorcycle helmet with a GoPro camera light and a Teradek HDMI transmitter. 30 extras from a nearby town played the zombies.
The guys who run Chat Roulette must be thrilled at this kind of exposure, because I'm like Tom. It's been, I don't know how many years since I've even thought about it. I remember it being kind of a novelty at first, and then it became kind of a place for everyone to show their wieners, and I kind of lost interest, and then now there's this. So I always like it when somebody comes up with artistic weird ways to sort of hack stuff like this.
I'm very impressed that Chat Roulette is still running. It was this thing for 3 months, and then people had moved on, but I like that. Yeah. And I don't think you can do that on YouTube. Say, you know, this sort of like instant chat, video, real-time video chat. Like, you could not do that on YouTube. So Chatterboard probably was the only platform that could do that.
Yeah, you can do, I mean, you can do live chats where, you know, a large audience comes to watch one person do something. But what made this unique in my mind is that it's still got the chat roulette part, which is people are just accidentally discovering it, and then they're participating. They're unwitting participants when they first get there, and they participate.
When it's one-on-one, right?
Right.
I mean, don't forget, chat roulette is just one video to another video. So you're the only person controlling that guy for that particular amount of time.
So they have like the 30 extras from a nearby town, like waiting for some dude to show up.
Just hanging out. Yeah.
That's genius.
Just chilling.
That's genius. Respect.
Yeah, it's pretty smart, pretty interesting. It's a strange platform to use, but I guess, hey, if you're going to put Chat Roulette back in the limelight, why not do it this way?
Yeah.
A Galaxy Quest reboot is headed to Amazon. They haven't announced a pilot. Yay! There's no word on whether the original cast will be involved, but it is the same creators who made the movie, who are behind the reboot. Also, they produced Breaking Bad, or at least one of them did. So I'm pretty sure, by grab Thar's hammer, that they'll never give up, never surrender, until it's done right.
Well,
the
all
greatest
right.
Greatest Star Trek movie ever made.
It's a great, it really is. Ever. It's really awesome. That movie is awesome, but how do you do this? If the original, okay, let's just say you got the original cast. These are all older actors, older actresses.
No, you don't.
They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. There's no way they get all those people.
Best, we're going to see guest star. You're going to have to come up with a plot that either recasts them or they show up as guests.
Yeah.
It's Galaxy Quest, the next generation.
That is so good. I mean, that's probably why it's been in development hell forever. Because, you know, how do you restart the story or reboot it?
Yeah.
Tim Allen, it was Tim Allen, right? And there's Tony Shalhoub as well.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub is in it. He was great.
Sam Rockwell,
Snape.
Sigourney.
Alan Rickman.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. These are big names in this thing.
Yeah. Some of the smaller parts were relatively big names. And how they'll make this into a series, though.
The way I would do it is I would make Galaxy, like they're bringing back Galaxy Quest, right? As a reboot, like a Battlestar Galactica type thing. The actual contact with the alien race has been hushed up, has been quieted. Nobody knows about it. And there's people who don't want them to reboot it because they're afraid of what will happen with the alien race.
So it's like meta.
Yeah. And then you bring in your guest stars. If you can get Sigourney Weaver for one episode or Alan Rickman for one episode, et cetera. That's one way you could do it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be very disappointed if they botch this. I mean, and they're writers. They're very good writers. So you have to assume that they'll find something smart and funny to do.
Well, Trek fans love that show or that movie, and they love it. They love it because it's a great way to be self-referential and not be mean to the Trek movement.
It's a celebration of fandom.
It really is.
Honestly, it really is a celebration of the best aspects of Trek fandom.
Yeah.
And it's not snarky. I mean, it's very funny, but it's not mean. There's a lot of respect in there, even though, you know, we're being made fun of mercilessly. I mean, I say we because, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy who wears uniforms and all that.
Yeah.
If you can get movie star Kevin Spacey to do a Netflix series, if you can get Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson to do an HBO series, might be able to get a couple of these folks to at least guest star.
Sure.
And it's where it's happening. I mean, it's where, you know, the exciting stuff is happening for actors and for directors and for writers. So, I mean, specifically Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah.
Hey there, Star Wars toy fans. Star Fury Zeta has news for you. On September 3rd, there's going to be an 18-hour live unboxing stretched across 15 cities and 12 countries, revealing upcoming Star Wars toys on what they're calling Force Friday. The live stream will feature top digital stars from Disney's Maker Studios network. One of the event hosts will be our pal Anthony Carboni, and the YouTube Space LA production manager in charge of the event is Eileen Rivera.
Oh, that's great. Disclaimer. We know her. She's married to Tom Merritt.
Oh.
That's fantastic. Oh, wow. I'm stoked. I'm jealous of them. I think the whole thing, you know, stuff being revealed is great and all, and I'm excited about what the future holds for my collectibles, but I'm more interested that friends are going to be doing that and how exciting is that. That's awesome.
Question. So are we talking about the Lego sets or all the other toys as well?
You know, I don't know if it's Lego. I think it's not Lego. I don't know if there will be a Lego set, but I've most of... And as much as my wife is involved in this, she won't tell me anything, so I don't know what's in it.
I just tried. Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. I know enough about it to know it's multiple types of toys, so I don't think it's all going to be Lego.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like the new Kenner line of the action figures. It's probably, you know, the stuff we all got before we're going to get again. It's all that stuff, and that's exciting because that means BB-8 toys that might actually work like a BB-8, things like that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
So it's around the world 18 hours.
Yeah, so every hour they go to a different city and unbox something at midnight.
That's crazy.
That is
so
it's crazy. Like, can you imagine the logistics?
It's a huge nightmare.
I don't want to.
You won't have to. You won't have to imagine them.
I know somebody who does.
Someone's going to tell you all about it.
Yeah, and this has been getting dinged on blogs because people are looking at it like, who are these people? But I think it's blogs who don't really follow toy unboxings or Maker Studios. And there's some big names for Maker Studios.
I mean, my kid is so into unboxing. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, you know, he's 7 years old, so I'm trying to keep him away from the iPad as much as possible. But it's just, and he doesn't, it's not that he wants to buy the toys, he just loves it. He wants to make his own. So, anyhow,
well, let's finish up with the Hugo Awards. They were announced last week for the best in science fiction. The positive news, Three Body Problem by Chinese author Cixin Liu, translated by Ken Liu, won best novel. Guardians of the Galaxy and Orphan Black also received Hugos. Several others were given out. Wesley Chu received the Campbell Award for Best New Writer. On the downside, no award was given for novella, short story, related work, editor in either short or long form, and that's because no award option received the most votes in those categories. Several nominees got on the ballot through a campaign that complained that their kinds of writers were being ignored at the Hugos, and the majority of Hugo voters preferred to give no award in those categories than award the campaign.
Did they, so Manu, I know you've got some opinions on this. Do you think they, was that the right way to do this, to vote no award? Is that how we fix this problem? Because it's been controversy for months. People have been talking about it.
Yeah. I'm of two minds on this. On the one hand, the community has always been welcoming and very bold and tolerant, and even of critical points of views from within the community. So I think there was a point of process and the hijacking of the process. And the result of the way things pan out is like this is the first time there's more than 5,000 people voting for the new vote. So it sort of awakened the sleeping giant of fandom. But on the other hand, I was kind of put off and very surprised by the strident tone of the people involved in the campaign. And I don't want to name names and, you know, but I always thought science fiction was a place of tolerance and openness. And that was the point. So I was very surprised and I'm relieved personally, but you know, it leaves a bad taste. The vote is the vote. Like it's uncontrovertibly, you know, it's uncontrovertible. The vote is the vote. But in the long run, I think it would be a good thing to address the grievances or to sort of try to bring these people into the fold and in the conversation.
Yeah. Of the people who had reasonable concerns, I think you're absolutely right. And this is what my opinion was when the campaign got their slate nominated in so many places, was that it doesn't change what's actually good. What's really more important is what you think is good. And somebody changing the way an award system works doesn't change what's good and what you like. The fact that we had so many people vote no award makes me think that the Hugo system played out. It worked. You had people try to game it, and then a counter force counter gamed it. And it probably needs some tweaks, no doubt about it. And there probably needs to be addressing concerns on all reasonable sides of the argument to make sure that everybody gets a chance to have their voice be heard. But
and at the end of the day, I think, you know, this is not an argument that should be had in the context of awards, but rather, you know, in the context of blogs and forums and in the normal conversation that we fans have amongst ourselves. I think trying to hijack the process of awards was sort of it was a political statement and was bringing culture wars into a place that, I mean, come on, the Hugos, you know, this is the prize that was awarded to people like William Gibson and Isaac Asimov. You have to respect that.
Yeah, to me, what happened is a lot like, it doesn't happen as much anymore, but the Oscars used to be this platform for an actor or an actress or a director or somebody. Mm-hmm. If they won, they would get up, sometimes deny the award and do it in the name of some cause they really believed in or something. So award shows being used in that way, I understand why people do it, because there's a platform and people are going to notice.
It's a megaphone, right?
Yeah, it's a megaphone.
The biggest
exactly.
megaphone you can get.
Exactly. And so while I understand the tactic, I would prefer it just be a more of a dialogue before, perhaps after, not necessarily only when these awards come around, and maybe that'll happen.
I had that idea. I tweeted it, but you know, that maybe the groups, the two groups behind the campaign should create their own award. And actually we would have a real confrontation of projects, and that might actually be good for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, not that, you know, as creating some kind of splinter group or something like that, because it sounds like Monty Python, right? So it's more like, okay, you know, do like Fox News did, if that's what you're really about. And you know what? Fox News has been incredibly successful.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, create your own platform, create your own awards. If
the People's
really
Front of Judea, front, we're the Judean People's Front.
Exactly.
Well said. Yeah.
Exactly.
Just reverse it. The UGO Awards, and we're done.
And the Go Hugh Awards. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I hope they do that, actually, because that will be interesting. It will create, I'm all for any kind of debate. I think debate is very important. Debate is really the ferment of science fiction.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And fandom. So, you know, we love to spend hours and hours debating this, that, and these final points and all that. I wrote a stupid book, you know, about the comics of Star Trek just because.
Right.
So it's like, this is part of what we are and who we are and how we live in the world. And I think more debate is good.
Well, let's see.
Not necessarily violent debate.
Yeah. Well, let's see if there's any debate about the answers you give to today's pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
Okay. It's Manu's chance to answer hard trivia questions about an area of his expertise. As it turns out, you have a very special area of expertise, and that is Star Trek trivia. So here are your questions. By the way, if you get one right, you hear this. If you get it wrong, you hear this. And Tom will keep score the whole time and tell you how he did at the end. So here you go. First question. What planet does Walker Keel demand Picard meet him at in the episode Conspiracy in the Next Generation?
Oh, my God. I have no recollection.
All right. That would be incorrect. The answer is Ditalix B, which
actually it was correct. He had no recollection, so you get a point for that.
All right. That'll give you an idea how Tom scores this. Next question. In The Wrath of Khan.
Oh,
this is a good one. In The Wrath of Khan, what nebula is the setting for the final battle between Kirk and Khan?
Oh, my God. No, it's not Genesis. That's the planet.
Right.
No. I should know that, but I don't.
No guess. It is the Mutara Nebula.
Of course, it was hard.
Another point, because yes, you should have done that, but you didn't.
Yes, it's horrible. I know.
It's
okay,
going great. Next one is, what kind of liquor does Deanna Troi become drunk on in Star Trek First Contact?
I think it's bourbon.
You are close.
Kentucky bourbon.
Close. No, well, actually not very close. It's tequila is the answer. Tequila.
Is it tequila?
Yep.
But he's drinking bourbon.
I think Riker is drinking bourbon in that scene, but I'm unsure. We may have to go to the judges on that one.
you guys know better than me.
Well, we'll find out.
I'll give you a half point for the confusion.
Man, this is
and
going
also
on.
Because I'm drinking tequila and bourbon mixed together.
This is going really well, actually, for you. All right.
I'm doing awesome.
Yeah, you're doing great. In the original series episode, Metamorphosis, what rare disease does Commissioner Nancy Hedford contract?
Is it the vegan plague?
It is Sakuro's disease. Sakuro's disease. So you were...
What the hell? What the hell?
Next question. What faction / species?
You guys went all to the deep end there. Oh my god. Okay.
Here you go. Hold on, my computer's being weird. All right. What faction / species does Sisko get involved into the Federation Dominion War in the episode In the Pale Moonlight? It's Deep Space Nine.
Oh, that is easy. The Romulan.
All right. Let me check and see if you're correct. Hold on. You are correct. Nicely done.
Well done.
You got it. Yep.
Full point.
Oof.
In which episode of Voyager features a holodeck program that simulates a Maquis mutiny aboard the ship?
Wait, isn't that the whole show?
It's kind of the entire arc, isn't it? But there's one specific episode.
Is it author? No, that's not that one. Okay. I give up.
Whoops. There we go. It is Worst Case Scenario is the name of the episode. That one's just near impossible. I don't know who would get that. Final two questions. In Star Trek Into Darkness, after Kirk loses his command, what ship does Spock get reassigned to?
I've seen it once. It's not the Enterprise? Is it the Enterprise? Does he take over the Enterprise? Doesn't he?
Well.
Become the captain of the Enterprise?
Well, it's the USS Bradbury. Like, named after the famous science fiction writer. There you go.
Goodness.
Winner in his own right. Final question. The final episode of Enterprise ties back into which episode of The Next Generation? So there's a final episode of the Bakula Enterprise series ties into what episode of The Next Generation?
It's like Deanna Troi and Riker on the holiday hanging out.
You're absolutely correct. Yep.
And it's towards the end of TNG.
You're close.
But I do not... No, it's not All Good Things, but it's like at the end, like when they're back together or something.
You're so stinking close to the answer, but you're not quite there. The answer is The Pegasus. The Pegasus.
Oh, yes. The one where Riker has to deal with his own past.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right. So, not so bad. Tom, tell him how we did.
Awful. Well, Scott, you lose a point for saying Ray Bradbury got a Hugo because very famously, Fahrenheit 451 was released between the two Hugo Award periods in the 50s and didn't get a Hugo when it definitely should have.
Damn it.
I'm just saving you the emails that other people are going to send you.
I'm really shattering here.
Now, point totals
for
Mane, 3.5 points.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Out of 8?
No.
You could have done worse. You could have done worse. Congratulations. You've got some points. That's all that matters. All right, it's time for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Forecast is fun because we get to take a minute and try to talk about the future, what we think things will be in the far-flung, near, or even mid-range future. And it used to be a whole show we used to do. Now it's just a segment. And Tom, you picked it this week. What do you got?
Well, I think an analog of steampunk is going to come along sometime. I'm not sure when. It could be 10 years, maybe 20 years. And will dominate science fiction literature genres for a time. The way we get trends of like, space opera's dominating. Or in fantasy, like, dark George R. R. Martin-like fantasy. We're going to have an analog of steampunk, but it will be stories of the late 20th century if the dreams of the 50s and 60s had been realized. If moon landings had continued. If we had had moon colonies by the year 2000. And I don't know if it'll be called, like, moonpunk or something, but I got this idea because we're reading A Canticle for Leibowitz next month on Sword and Laser, and a lot of people are pointing out, oh, well, it gets the technology wrong. And I'm like, well, it doesn't, because it was written in 1954 through 1957. So at the time, they didn't know what the technology was going to be. And I think that's going to increasingly be a cool thing for authors to play around with.
What do you think?
I think it's brilliant. I don't know if you remember, but Pan Am, when they were still in existence, like after the first moon landing, they were giving away tickets to the moon for, you know, in 20 years.
Wow.
Or they were selling them for $1 or something like that. So there's something there. You know, remember 2001 and the Kubrick movie, and regular airplane service. I mean, not airplane, regular spaceship service to the moon. I think it's kind of brilliant. I think maybe either one of you should start. Just get down on your, you know, get out of your computer and start writing.
Well, that's what Tom actually has books, so he's the guy to do it. I'll say this, though. Like, the movie, at least, the Philip K. Dick book, I don't know so much because I haven't read it, but Total Recall did this to Mars. It turned it into kind of this dystopic place where, sure, there was mining and there was all this opportunity, but what ended up happening was a lot of slums and mutations and people living on, you know, nothing and having it kind of be a pretty steampunk sort of vision for that movie. I love the idea of the moon becoming a dumping ground for people we don't want around or for... you know, culture wars of various kinds. I think that would be really interesting.
Just turning it into like the Rock,
China.
Well, escape from New York.
Escape from the moon. Sure. Escape from moon punk.
Riker's Island on the moon.
Tom, you could call it moon punk. I mean, there's your title. You're right.
Yeah.
Moon punk is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's retro.
You should do it.
Yeah.
Ken from Chicago points out it's retrofuturism. There is a name for that idea of like liking the old vision, and I'm pretty into that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, do you know the you can see on YouTube, you can watch on YouTube the 1950s Russian movies about how Russia was going to colonized space. And
yeah,
it's
the Russian World of Tomorrow type stuff is fascinating.
Yes, exactly. Oh, it's amazing. So
I haven't seen any of that.
Type of vibe.
I'm into that. Is it like subtitled or dubbed over or anything? So I'll understand what the hell's going on.
Just learn Russian, like, Scott.
I can't remember. As you might have noticed, that my memory is not that great. But like, if you type in, you know, Russian science fiction, where we are now, it's very famous. It will pop up on YouTube right away.
Well,
and these are like superb production value movies, and where they explain, you know, so this is something, you know, like what if the world of Pan Am going to the moon was still around? There's something there that's very, I think, personally to me, very appealing and enthralling.
Yeah. Well, you're getting me excited for a thing that doesn't even exist yet. So yeah, bring it on.
We got a
great email from a listener who sent in an email to currentgeek@gmail.com. That's where you can send your feedback. It says this: great show, guys. Timothy here, and I have a question. Is there still a fight over who is a better captain between Picard and Kirk, or has that old fight gone away finally? They're both great captains, he says.
Jane, wait.
All right, let's be in a vacuum here, Manu. Let's say that there are no other captains but Kirk and Picard. Where is the argument in 2015?
I think the argument is still where it was 20 years ago. And because, you know, the show's ended, so it's still, some people are much more into Kirk because he represents a certain ideal of manliness and fun. And some people are much more inclined to be with Picard because he represents the sort of normative ideal of, you know, the very evolved and rational man. Mm-hmm. The characters are so starkly defined that I think, I mean, it's a testament to the genius of Roddenberry in that sense. The characters are so starkly defined and so clearly identified that I think the debate is still raging. I still, every time, you know, I bump into somebody who's a Star Trek fan, we end up with like Picard or Kirk. And myself, I'm more of a Picard person, but I'm in awe at Shatner in general. So
yeah,
and his performance and the character and the way he inhabits the character and makes it not too serious yet very serious. I don't know so much about Chris Pine and the Alex universe. I don't know. I don't know if you would you. I mean, that's another question. Do you have to compare the new Kirk and new Trek?
Yeah.
The Picard.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
that's a good. That's a good
Shatner
question.
Shatner Kirk or Pine Kirk?
Sure. Or hey, I'll even take it a step further. Picard or Stuart Picard,
yep.
Or what's his name? Mad Max Picard, who played him in Nemesis, his clone. What about that guy?
Yes.
Or the little kid, yes. Or the little kid in the elevator with all the other little Star Trek kids in that season three thing.
You remember that episode called Tapestry where you see like the youth of Jean-Luc Picard,
I do.
Crazy young man,
yeah.
And he's much more like Kirk, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I like Picard, is he grew up.
Yeah, it feels like yeah. That's a good way to put it. He has the Kirk bravery, he has the Kirk stoicness, all those things. But he also has he matured, and Kirk never
he was very grown
did.
Up.
Yeah.
Kirk
yeah.
was the right man for his time, though. It was Wild West.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Janeway was the right woman for the where she was at. And,
well,
and
can we get a shout out for Sisko here?
Sisko was the right guy for the thing.
Sisko is my favorite captain. I would say
nice.
But, you know, I know it's not a very fashionable thing to say. But.
No, I love Sisko. I think in some ways, he's the most competent. Like, he could play to a lot more fields because he was challenged in different ways.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and he's how very about, conflicted. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how about Captain Archer? Sure, no? Sure. No one? Okay.
He was all right.
I like Archer. I really like Archer.
Yeah, he was fine. He didn't have the best show to be
there
Archer
were things
in.
I liked about Enterprise,
right.
For sure.
All right. Yeah. And so, look.
Enterprise is a great show. It's very underrated.
All I'm saying to people out there listening is don't pick sides. Just be happy that we had all these captains, that we have their dichotomies and their differences and their similarities, and just be happy you have Star
Trek. There's space for everybody.
Exactly.
My favorite is Captain Robert April. The very first captain of the Enterprise.
Nice.
Yes.
I like it.
No, that's Pike.
Yeah, Pike. That's Pike, right?
Pike in the cage, yes. Oh, my God.
And the picture of April in the Star Trek encyclopedia is a picture of Gene Roddenberry in a captain's outfit.
Oh, that's even better. Captain Gene Roddenberry. I like that, too. Speaking of Star Trek, that pretty much does it for the show. But before we go, we got to make sure Manu gets a chance to talk about why people should go get his book, where they can get it, and why they're missing out if they don't read it. Tell them all about it.
So, you know, I'm going to give the capsule usual thing. I noticed I was actually, this all came up having discussions with my neighbor who used to work on Star Trek. Mm. And we were looking for something about the economics of Star Trek, and we couldn't find any book. Everything's been covered about Star Trek, the physics, the religion, the technology, everything except the economics. And it seems that the economics is such a major feature of the show. And so my friend Chris, who wrote some episodes on Enterprise, was like, okay, well, you should write it. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And so a year and a half later, it is up for funding at inkshares.com, which is a crowdfunded publisher. And you can pre-order your copy, and the book will be in bookstores by March for the 50th anniversary. And so far, you know, we have gotten incredible support from every corner of the geek sphere. And I'm elated because I did not expect this to be such a, you know, I'm very happy, and it's a fun book. And I think also, you know, I'm trying to make a few points about how this all works. Mm. So it gets a little hairy at times and a little technical, but I think it's, you know, it's appropriately geeky to be technical about the details of the economics of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And mostly it's dealing with the post-scarcity and general automation and the fact that in the Star Trek society, robots have made work redundant. So why do you, if you do not have to work to survive, why work at all? And why be a captain on the ship? And how does that work? What's the point? You know, if you do not have to survive and if you live in opulence like they do in Star Trek, your motivation to actually thrive and compete will be very different from what we experience now on world. So that is why I wanted to write the book. And
People should go check it out. It's really easy to find. Go to inkshares.com/project/Trekonomics, or you can just search for Trekonomics on Inkshares, and you'll find it. That's inkshares.com. Man, it was fantastic having you on the show, man. Thanks for
being here. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Scott. You guys really pummeled me with the quiz.
The quiz is always a little rough, but
it's the worst. Now that Scott and I have been through it too, yeah, we totally understand.
We had to do it ourselves. Again, Trekonomics on Twitter. If you've got suggestions for his Star Wars ideas, like I said, he is definitely looking for those. So, Trekonomics on Twitter. Tom, anything from you before we go?
You know what? I'll just put an extra word. When you're over there at Inkshares buying Manu's book, Trekonomics, which you should totally do, take a look at the Sword and Laser collection on Inkshares as well. We got a book from J.F. Dubow and many more to come. So Inkshares is pretty cool. You can find Gary Whitta's book over there. But yeah, go to Inkshares, buy Manu's book, Inkshares, and then take a look around.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Inkshares is happening.
Really cool.
It is.
Really cool stuff. People should check it out. Quick note, the big progress on the MyExtraLife.com book that I threw up on Kickstarter and is now in production, which you'll soon be seeing. Very excited about it. If you want to follow progress on that, keep your eye at MyExtraLife.com or at FrogPants.com, and you can kind of see where I'm at, putting up a new video for supporters this weekend to let you know where we're at. Big thanks to everybody who makes this show possible. Chat room, Andrew Allen for our theme music. Find us at Current Geek on Twitter, at Scott Johnson on Twitter, at Ace to Tech for Tom. You can always find us there. Oh, gosh, what else? Give us an email, currentgeek@gmail.com. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our subreddit. Currentgeek.com for everything else. A lot of .coms today. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Complete.
Hi, this is Phil back with another game-punting pick of the week from the world of crowdfunded tabletop games. This week, we're backing Mint Tin Mini Apocalypse on Kickstarter. A game designed to fit inside a tiny mint tin, the appropriately named Mint Tin Mini Apocalypse, packs a lot of gameplay into this teeniest of packages. It's the end of the world and you need to get your meeples and some supplies into the fallout shelter before the other player can do the same, all while avoiding a giant monster and nefarious acts by your opponent. There are no nice guys at the end of the world. Compact, waterproof, and windproof, MTMA is the perfect game to bring on a hike or camping trip, or to keep in your purse or pocket for restaurants or park benches. Mint Tin Mini Apocalypse can be had for $13, and the campaign wraps up on August 30th. For more news and reviews of crowdfunded tabletop games, check us out on the Game Punting podcast, available in iTunes and at GamePunting.com. Happy gaming!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at FrogPants.com.